Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to our group coaching call here, the first of two coaching calls in July. We have another one coming up the last week of July, just giving you another opportunity to ask questions, get feedback before you continue to implement at that point, really beyond this month, on your own. So we're going to have two coaching calls this month. So great to be here, July 7th. As usual, we'll go ahead and go straight to questions. If you are on the phone, star 2 raises your hand, star 2 on your telephone keypad. Just make sure to only press it once. Otherwise, it will lower your hand if you press it the second time. And, of course, if you're listening to me through the webcast, which means you're listening to me through your computer speakers, then you just type in your question, hit submit, and I'll read it out loud and address it. So, all right, we got Sharon. Sharon, you're on. How are you?
Hello, Ed. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing well. Good to talk to you.
Good. Well, thanks so much for chiming in on advice on the Facebook. And I had told you there about my conversations with a client. She's an email marketer and I guess really busy putting out people's emails and hires freelancers to do the actual writing because she's and she does all the social media. And she has a financial tech company that's growing in Miami and asked me about a bid on 2 blogs a month. And you gave me feedback on that, and I gave it to her, you know, told her what I thought I could do it for. She's the one that pays her other freelancers 15 cents a word. And then she sent me back some rewrites that she wants to have done and wanted to know what my price would be, and she sent information about the company. And when I looked at these pieces, I could tell that someone wrote them that was probably nothing wrong with 15 cents a word, but I don't think English was their native language, the people who wrote these, because they're pretty bad. And she wanted to know what I would do to rewrite them. And I wrote back that I could do them both. They're about 250 words each, and that I'd do them both for $350. And I haven't heard anything. So she also never sent me a photo back, a high-res photo that she promised on a job she already paid me for, which was to do a press release, and it got approved as soon as I sent it in. And I have a media list I developed to send it to, and she paid me right away, but she hasn't sent me back the final approved copy and the high-res photo. So I just sent her an email about the status of that and also the status of could we have a discussion or could I help her out on the rewrites. And I think she's busy, but I just don't know what to do next. So I'm looking for some input, how much to bug people. Usually I can get her on the phone right away, but I don't think she's bidding me against someone else, but I don't know.
So when was the last time you followed up with her or the last time you heard from her, either way?
She sent me these rewrites. We talked about me initially doing stuff, and then she sent me the things to rewrite and asked for a price. That was Friday the 1st, and I turned it around immediately and sent it back to her, and then we had the holiday, Monday. So, and this is Thursday. So I just followed up with, just checking back on the status. I'd love to do the work. And I looked at everything you sent. And also in the same email, I asked about the status of sending me the photo and the approved copy on the press release that she already paid me for.
Yeah. Well, so it sounds to me like it is a case of being slammed and or, you know, away on vacation and maybe getting back and now being behind and all that, just because the fact that, you know, she hasn't gotten back to you on the other thing, which, you know, is to her benefit. She's already paid you for.
Yeah.
they're both same story. You haven't heard back. So it's more than likely that. By the way, that's usually the case, and especially if you follow kind of the process I laid out in sessions 6 and 7, where you've talked about scope, you've talked about timing, you've talked about all those things, including money, then in those cases, if everything's pretty much checked out and you've sent the quote and you don't hear back, I will tell you that statistically, most of the time, it's not because of you. It's not because of something you did wrong or failed to do or whatever. So just keep that in mind, because I know, and I fall into this all the time, the tendency is, oh, my gosh, what did I do? Or what's wrong? Or did I turn her off or whatever? It's usually not that. So I think you did the right thing. If it was the first and now you just followed up again, that's about right. I usually wait, you know, for 3 to 5 business days or so.
And that's about what it is.
Yeah, just give her another 3 to 5 business days. And check in again. Did you email her today or did you call her?
I emailed her. It was getting close to this call and I didn't want to get stuck on the phone, so I just emailed her.
Okay, yeah. So I like to switch back and forth, email, phone. So maybe next time you call and just see. So here's the other thing you need to keep in mind, and this is a great question, because this, believe me, like everyone is going to go through this. Everyone's going to have the same questions. You can't advance a prospect if they don't have the motivation or the reasons to do so. There's not much you can do to get them to take action if they're not ready to, for whatever reason. So I think when you think about follow-up, don't ever think of it in terms of what can I do to convince her to hire me. Instead, ask yourself, okay, what can I do just to make sure that I remind her of this? But you've already laid all the cards on the table. You've given her a price. You've made a case for this. This is why it's so important to, when you provide a quote or when you have a discussion about a project, that you kind of emphasize what makes you different. So in this example, you know, like you said, right? Yeah, you know, so this is okay, but I can tell it was written by someone maybe whose English isn't their first language.
I would never say that to her.
Yeah, but you know, you're basically communicating that indirectly. I think there's some serious but significant improvements that could be made to make this clear. However you want to communicate that, right? And then emphasize like your experience and what makes you different. Not in a, you don't know what you're doing, you messed up by hiring this person, I can fix it. But in a, you know, I can think of at least 6 things here that we could do to improve this. However you want to communicate that and then emphasize, you know, and I, this is why I can do it, or this is what makes me a little different. You know, I have a background in this area or in this industry or writing in this format or whatever. Then you've given the price and you provided the context for that price. That's really what it boils down to. When you give a price, you always have to provide the context for that price. Otherwise, all the prospect has is the price. And it's, then they're going to compare you to somebody else. It's always going to be somebody cheaper. But if she's got, let's say, $1 a word versus 15 cents a word, but the dollar a word is Sharon, and this is what I know about Sharon, here's what makes her different or better, then that might outweigh the 15 cents, because the context there is, yeah, they're, you know, they can turn it around quickly, but it's not great.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, and I've turned things around quickly for her, and it's, the fintech is a newer industry, but I have worked in finance and gave her financial, samples as well. And so I just said, you know, I'm here to help you get your deliverables out, and in my email. But I guess I do put more context with my pricing, so that's a good idea.
Good. Okay. Well, you know, the point is, there's not much else you could do at this point. You're just following up, but it's a basic follow-up. There's not much you could do to convince her that you're – hopefully you've already done that, and now it's an issue if she's got to move on it either way.
Yeah, and I do have a win with getting at long last a newsletter/blogging contract from an attorney that specializes in catastrophic case negotiation of care, really specialized, and I had written his LinkedIn profile as a subcontractor, and through the same LinkedIn person, I have the contract to write six newsletters coming up.
Great.
And they're really case studies put into a newsletter about how he works, and I'm getting $400 a newsletter for those.
Oh, that's excellent.
I'm happy about that, and I think he's going to be a great client. So,
congratulations.
That
is a win. That's fantastic. I love it.
Yeah,
I love
thanks.
It. Well, great. Thanks for the
help.
Feedback. And, yeah, congratulations. All right, good stuff. All right, so let's see. Next here on the phone, we got Yilda in San Antonio. How are you, Yilda?
Hi, Ed. I'm doing fine.
Excellent. Good to talk to you.
Okay, so I guess my question has a two-part question.
Okay.
I've been back and forth with this prospect client who came to me through my website.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been hard to get him over on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and reviewed, you know, sessions 6 and 7. But still, you know, in one of the replies, she just said that she would let me know whenever she would be available for, you know, to meet on the phone and when we can proceed. But
mm-hmm.
in the meantime, she keeps giving me more details and she keeps adding stuff to the project that she would like me to help her.
Okay.
She started first with a lead magnet, then she wanted me to add the squeeze page as well. And
mm-hmm.
and this has been, you know, in informal communication just through the email. And finally, she came back and said, hey, you know, I would like 4 emails. And latest, which was this morning, then she asked me if I could also include speed testing for the emails, in this case, headlines. So the question
okay.
will be on that end, is how do you quote for speed testing? In this case, they are interested in just in providing different headlines.
So the subject lines, you mean, on the emails?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, just want to make sure, and you may want to clarify if she said headline. So just usually when I hear that with email, I'm thinking subject line, but.
Yeah, I'm sorry. She mentioned, let me see. Yes, she said headline, but she was referring to email, so I imagine that she's referring to subject line.
Okay.
Instead.
So you mean it won't matter too much with pricing, but you may want to, when you skip back to her, you may want to say, and just, you know, I assumed you meant subject line, but that's the way I'm looking at it. I just wanted to clarify. Usually there's not a big upcharge. That's the only thing that I'm doing extra for a test. It just depends on how much you're charging for the emails. But, you know, usually, like, what are you charging for the emails? How many emails are we talking about?
They're asking for 4 emails. But they're
4 emails?
Open to... Yeah, 4 emails, but they're open to other advice or recommendations I have on doing speed testing.
Okay.
Either for the squeeze page or.
Okay, and 4 emails, and so she wants how many additional subject lines? So an additional subject line per email?
She didn't specify. She just said, like, she didn't specify. Yeah.
Okay.
She
yeah, and by the way,
that
this is good that we're talking like this, because this is the kind of stuff, this is why you would want to have a conversation, you know. So I'm not saying you
mm-hmm.
need to beat her up on this, but just
right.
so you understand, it's not just me telling you, oh, you need to get her on the phone. It's like, you know, these are just hard things to go back and forth. So here's where you are right now. Let me take a step back first. So you got a prospect who reached out to you out of the blue online. They found you via LinkedIn or your website. This happens, okay? Now, when it happens, in many cases, they're not going to be the best prospects on earth, okay? Now,
mm-hmm.
I'm generalizing here, but it's they're if they found you, they're likely reaching out to two or three other people at least, and which means that somebody like that, unless they know what they're looking for, they're a little bit sophisticated, they're mostly going to go by price, which is why positioning yourself is so important, positioning yourself well. Because, and I'm just making this up, but let's say that your focus is environmental technology, and this is a prospect in environmental technology, and they're also looking at two or three other people who are kind of generalist, and maybe somebody else in healthcare, then, I mean, you have the upper hand, right? You have the advantage because you're much better closely positioned to their business than the other people. But it's so they're going to go mostly on price in most cases, and it's important to have a discussion, because this is where you can ask really good questions and show her by asking questions that that you're thinking through this the right way. So that's as an aside. Typically, for split testing, you're going to do an A-B. So for those four emails, you'll just give them an alternate subject line, you know, $50, $100 more at the most, as long as that's not a high percentage of the total cost that you're quoting here for the email. So how much are you quoting for the four emails?
I see. I have a tip yet to figure it out. I don't have my schedule here with me, but
okay.
Yeah, it would be, I guess, $250 to $350.
Okay. So, yeah, I would say another $100 then for another set of emails. And then what you could do, and if you really want to impress, let's say if you land the gig, you could offer two or three different alternates for each one. It's easy to do. It's easy to do.
Okay.
So then you're surprising her, you know. I have no idea that another reason to have the conversation. You can talk money during the conversation a lot more easily than you can over email. So I wouldn't, even if you're doing this via email, I would not just guess at this. I would also, it's important that you ask, what budget are you working with the writing, you know, because right, and some of you have already had this experience. We've talked about this in the forum. You're really guessing, especially somebody like this. You don't know anything about them. You don't know what they're expecting. You don't know who else they're talking with. So, you know, you could quote, let's say, $250 each. So that's $1,000. They might be talking to someone who's quoted $400 or $200, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you may want to quote that low, you know, in order to kind of get some momentum, get a foothold here and get some experience, but you won't know unless you understand what you're working with.
Right. Which now that kind of leads to my second, you know, RB of the question, which is one of the first communications that we have, she really was interested to know my rates. And one thing I noticed is that she was not asking a rate per hour. She was basically saying rate, you know, your fees. So one of the things I did was send her already the fees. After that, I never heard of her, so I follow up, you know, using the forward strategy, and adding, hey, I forgot to mention something, and then I gave her a white paper I wrote about something that she might be, you know, interested in. And that's when she came back with giving me more details. So she already knows the range of my fees. So my question would be, should I approach her not providing exactly like a proposal, obviously, because I don't have all the details, but maybe giving her some ranges and some additional questions, and just for her to understand why it's important for us to meet over the phone?
Yeah, I would. So she wants something, right? So go ahead and give it to her. But it's okay to give her either a range or to give her some of the information and then ask for a quick conversation. So, you know, you could either give her kind of a tight range, you know, the email somewhere, and go on the lower end of maybe what your rate sheet said or your fee schedule said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, say 2 to 250 or 2 to 300 on the emails, an additional $50 for subject lines, or $100 or whatever you want to quote. So much on the landing page, a squeeze page, and so much on this. But give a range for each and say, you know, that I need to know a little bit more and I have some of these questions, but hopefully that will at least give you an idea. Let me know if you want to discuss further and maybe we can get some I can get some clarification on some of these items and give you a firm quote on everything.
Okay.
Right? So that's the incentive. It's like, okay, I gave you what you wanted. At least I gave you a pretty good idea. I still have some questions. Here's what they are. Let me know when we can chat briefly. And if she's interested, then hopefully at this point she's willing to now give you that time.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah. Thank you, Claudette.
Yeah, you bet. And yeah, and keep in mind, so it's okay. It's okay to quote low. It's okay to be aggressive at this point. You're just trying to get in some doors. These are not going to be long-term clients in most cases. You're just trying to get some experience. You're trying to get some samples. You're trying to boost your confidence. That's a huge value from these experiences. So it's less about the money and much more about just getting in there. I mean, think about what that would do, right, to your confidence and self-esteem and your momentum if you landed this gig. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so good luck. Keep us posted.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. All right, I got a caller here. It's a 909 area code. Doesn't have a name. But you're on.
Hi, Ed.
Hey.
Hi, this is Ryan, RK Anthony.
Hey, Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. I was calling and I wanted to ask a question about, I guess, just following up on a post I had left in the group last week regarding a client that I was going back and forth with, and you gave me some advice about you had mentioned that I asked what the price range they were looking at for their budget, and I didn't do that, and that was the big problem. So what ended up happening was after what I had posted, I asked you if I should just kind of give up and let it go and maybe just leave the door open somehow, and I did that initially. But then over the weekend on Saturday, I decided, because he had already sent me a brochure that he was hoping for me to get started on. He sent me the brochure, and I sent him back the brochure on Saturday with some, basically I went through it and I gave him as much comments and ideas and just sort of things that could get him get the ball rolling if he decided to do it on his own. And I thought maybe that would kind of open up, you know, his open up the doors again to talk about working together again, and it did actually. He got back to me shortly after that, and he basically said, you know, he was impressed by the fact that I gave him some free value. I didn't charge him for it, and he was going to take a look at the comments. But he didn't really invite me to like call him back or to get in contact. He said, you know, maybe we can figure something out. So I haven't actually gotten back to him yet. It's still, that was on the second, and I was just kind of letting it go for a bit to see if he was going to get in touch with me. But the big problem is that he was really trying to get someone to write a 4 blog post job every month for $300, and we're talking 500-600 word blog posts, and he wanted somebody that that knew how to create a strategy behind the blog, and it just seemed like a lot of work for $300 a month.
Yeah.
And he also wanted me to do the brochure, and probably not that much. He probably wasn't planning on spending what I was charging him for it, even at the lower side of it, particularly I'm starting out. So I guess part of all this is, should I just keep trying to open up the doors, or to get to email him back, or is it better to just sort of leave it the way it is now? Because I already know that he's not planning on spending a whole lot. We talked, and it was a good conversation. He seems like a great person to work with, but just doesn't have the budget. And the problem is, I would love to do it for my own portfolio, because their branding is great. So I would love to have that job in my portfolio, but I don't have a whole lot of time to take on stuff like this, because I already work full time in another job. You know, kids, I'm in school, so I have a lot of other things. So any little time I have to do this business work, I want it to either be at least decently paid, or I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out, is it worth doing such a big project like that, where it probably take up a huge portion of my time, and kind of, you know, the opportunity cost is that I would lose a bunch of other time to prospect for clients that I'm planning on working with that are in my target market.
Yeah. No, it's a great question. So a couple of thoughts before I answer that directly. One is, there's a tendency to not want to let go of someone. And you got to be mindful of that. Like, if it's just not a good fit for your specific situation, you know, a minute ago I said, hey, when you're starting out, just do what you need to get some momentum. But it's a spectrum, right? Everyone is in a different place in that spectrum. Some people are willing and are able to do a little bit more and be very, very aggressive, while others aren't going to be able to do that. And there's no right or wrong there. You just have to decide where you fall within that spectrum and make some decisions. Some of you guys in here have already landed a few clients, came into this experience with a couple of clients already. So you're in a different side. But you also have to factor your time and availability and what you can put into it, right? So that's one thing. The second thing is, keep in mind that there are more prospects out there. Okay, so this is not the only one. There will be others. And then the third thing is that, how do I say this? It's you can't convince somebody that they're looking at things the wrong way. Like, here's what's going to happen. This guy is going to end up finding someone who will say yes. It's not sustainable. Like, whoever they find is not going to work out for whatever reason. And he's going to find somebody else to replace them, and it's going to be the same problem. And at some point down in the future, they're going to realize that, you know what, this is what you get when you want somebody to do all this work for, you know, X amount of money, which is just nowhere near enough. Right? The good people just aren't going to take it. So, but you can't change their mind. They're going to have to find that out on their own. And I'll say one last thing, and then we'll get to some of this, you know, exactly what you're asking about. But I'm not saying you're doing this, Ryan, but this is something I see a lot, so, and they just reminded me, so I want to let everyone know. When you're prospecting and you finally land someone who's willing to have a dialogue with you, right, and now you're talking about a project, and do not stop prospecting. Let's say, because it could drag on. It could be weeks and weeks, and you're going back and forth, and you said, oh, I'm going to stop prospecting because this is the one. This is the one. I found somebody. And if it falls through and you've wasted 5 weeks with little to no prospecting, you have to start all over again. So, again, I'm not saying you did that, but it's just something I see a lot in these situations. So just everyone needs to be mindful of that. Here's the thing. He did something for him. He was very impressed. He was not expecting that. I think he feels bad. He wants to return the favor. But he's not willing to hire you for this, you know, at the rates that you quoted. So how about some other work? Like, I mean, he kind of packaged everything. I want this, and I want the blog post, and I want the brochure, and I want these squeeze pages and these lead magnets. What if he can just take one of those things? You know, this is probably not going to be one person, even if he goes with somebody else who's got the skill set to do everything. In fact, I think it's very hard to find someone who can do all that well, especially at the price point he's talking about. So what if you came back to him, and I don't know what else you looked at, but and offered to look at one of those items and just focus on that. And just tell him, listen, I'm not doing this as a gimmick. I'm not doing this to then try to win everything back. I respect where you're coming from, but I think I can really help you with this one thing, you know, like this lead magnet. And I'm willing to do it for X. You know, so what that could do is it might get you in the door and then develop the trust and credibility with this guy in the relationship that maybe you can look at some other things. The blog thing may never work out. Maybe that's somebody else. So the aspiration shouldn't be to land everything, but the aspiration should be, you know, can you get in the door another way? In a way that's not a recurring type of project, that you're tied into this, like you said, soaking up all your time, which you have very little of. I mean, is that a possibility?
Yeah, definitely. That's why I sent him back the brochure with comments, because I figured the brochure might be something that we can knock out, you know, in a couple of weeks, and then that's not an ongoing project. So I thought maybe if he came back at me with a positive response, then, you know, I could send him an email and say, let's focus on this brochure, because it was a pressing matter for him, and he doesn't have a lot of time anymore to work on that. So I was going to send him back an email and say, let's work on this brochure. I still won't charge you what I'd normally charge, but at least there's a cap on it, and I can get it done, and it would be over. And, so definitely I'm going to try to do that in the next email to really see if that would be the last opportunity for us to work together. Currently, maybe later, if they have a budget, we can talk about the blog, but yeah, certainly I could do that, and I'm gonna probably do that today then, and see if he opens up to that. I mean, it's just a shame, you know. I guess that's a hard thing to accept as a writer. It's a shame to see that he understands the value of having good copy, and he's been to conferences with Digital Marketer, and he writes copy himself, so he understands the value. But you know, if you don't have the budget, you don't have the budget, and I totally get that. So that's what I was trying to explain to him. I totally get it. It's not a big problem. Let's focus on something small and increment as the budget comes.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a tough thing. It is a shame, but it is what it is. And I will tell you, blogs are kind of commoditized, blog writing, especially for those types of businesses. So, you know, how would I equate it to? It's like I don't know, in the fast food business, is like everyone wants to know how much you sell hamburgers. You know, that's your loss leader, right? So that's your commodity. But nobody questions the other stuff. So that's where McDonald's makes their profit, on the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have to be really tight. Same thing in grocery store milk. Have you noticed? Like milk, a gallon of milk, of whole milk or 2% milk, it's the same price everywhere. Because people pay attention to that. But they know if they can get you in the store at the lowest possible price, then notice that milk is always in the back of the store. You have to walk through all these aisles and find other stuff.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, he gave you milk here, and your pricing included milk, and it was higher. So then he, like, focused on that. I know it's broader than that. But, yeah, try to go at it that way. And, listen, if it doesn't work out, move on, you know. It's fine,
yeah.
But stay in touch with him because, again, there'll come a point when he'll realize, you know what, I'm not finding the right person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. and I guess I want to segue into another question that's related to that, but that wasn't the first time that I had come across somebody who was trying to push the exposure as almost a currency in itself. And I know that, you know, doing a loss leader up front can work initially, but I think that, I don't know, just wanted to get your thoughts on how to approach this idea of exposure as currency is really, if I need to get, I need to pay bills, I can't always use exposure, at least up front. I know it may be helpful long term, but how do you approach that idea when somebody's trying to explain that exposure can be a big part of why they're paying you so low?
Yeah, so I pretty much shoot it down in a professional way. And the way I'll say it is something along the lines of, no, and I appreciate that, you know, that you're wanting to give me that kind of exposure. I will tell you that I've found that it doesn't typically translate into new business for me, so I don't really consider that in my pricing. So it's like, look, I appreciate you doing that, but here's what I found. And that way you shoot it down as a negotiation chip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
Thank him again, and you thank him again. It's like, but again, I appreciate the opportunity. Yeah, so there's that. People will use that a lot with you, and then they'll also use the I got a lot of work down the pike. You know, if he can do this for cheap,
yeah.
I got all this other work coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, the way I address it is, I appreciate that. That'd be great. I'd love to do more work with you if this one worked out. However, I have to take a look at this individually first because I treat this as a pilot project. And so this is an initial project just to make sure we're a good fit for each other, that we enjoy working with each other. Down the line, you know, once we get this one out of the wrapped up, we can look at those other opportunities separately. So, again, I always try to – I don't want to say shoot it down, but take the power away from that offer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I'll use that tactic. That sounds good. Well, that's all the questions I have. I appreciate your insight.
Okay. Well, good luck. Let us know if anything comes out of it.
Cool. I will. I'll keep you updated.
All right, Ryan. Take care, man.
You too.
All right. I got Steve over in Arkansas. What's up, Steve?
Hey, I had to get you off speakerphone there. I enjoyed your ATM talk this morning.
Oh, you like reverse writing?
Money.
Yeah.
I love that. I can read backwards. It was great for me. Unfortunately, I was on the phone with a prospect at the time it went live, so I had to watch the replay. But and it spoke exactly to a question that I had about my call. I always try to talk budget as soon as possible when talking to a client. Once we had our phone call and I got the kind of the scope of the project, I asked what the budget was, and she did not know. Now this is. Mm-hmm. A large company, a huge B2B industrial heating tracing solution company that has, and they just recently bought another company, and the project is to take about 18 product pages and 4 application pages from the one company that is more residential and kind of translate them, or she said finesse them into stuff that engineers would read. And it looks like it's going to, they have about a 2-month a slot for this. Since she didn't have the budget right up front, she was not, you know, hers was just to try to get hold of copywriters. I still want to press for the budget. How exactly do I do that?
So I don't typically press for the budget, and here's what I do.
Okay.
I say, okay, what budget are you working with? Well, I'm not really sure. You know, we're just kind of doing the research right now, looking at potential writers, blah, 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 whatever. Great. Whatever her answer, it's basically no. I'm not going to tell you, I don't know it. That's fine. You
right.
always have to have the backup question, which is, okay, well, here's what I can tell you, and it's not really a question, is you're giving them a ballpark range. So for, you know, 3 case studies, I typically charge somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500 a case study. That includes boom, 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 boom. So we're looking at somewhere between X and Y. And then I ask, is that within your budget? So great. She doesn't tell you, okay, well, we're talking about this much. I typically quote between this and that, and that includes, you know, this, that, and the other, and two rounds of requested revisions if needed. Now, is that within your budget? And it's interesting how somebody who didn't want to tell you or said she didn't know suddenly is now giving you an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's what you want. You want it. I would say 80% of the time at that point they're answering with something a little more concrete. Well, I think so, even if it's that. I think so.
Okay.
Or not. Let's say you quoted $5,000 or between $4,000 and $5,000 for something, and they were thinking between $500 and $1,000. It's good to know that too, because at least you know you're really far apart, and then you can decide, okay, is this going to be a good prospect for me or not? Now, this sounds like, you know, they're a big company. I'm not saying you're going to be that far apart, but at least you'll know. So go ahead and give her a ballpark, and then just throw it back at her. It's like playing ball. Okay, I'll toss the hot potato back to you. Is that within your budget?
Okay. Now she's already sent it. I hadn't had a chance to look at it, but she's given me some more information after our talk as to links to the pages that they want rewritten. And that she wants to also send me some more, like their template to work with next week. She's actually sounds like she wants to do a lot of the work for me, so it's easy on me, which that's kind of unusual, I think. But it does. I think she's removed from the budgeting process. But so basically, should I just take the information she sends me and work up the ballpark and see if I'm anywhere near? It's a large enough company that it shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
But I don't want to overprice either.
Yeah, so in that case, she's giving you a lot of information, right? So let's go back and use that actual example. She's asking web pages, and it's going to be, let's say, 10 pages. Well, you haven't seen the pages at that point. You're just talking for the first time. That's when you say, well, you know, it depends on a lot of factors, Susan, but usually for insight pages, I charge anywhere between $300 and $400 a page. Depends on, you know, what's in it, how dense they are with copy, how complex, any research, any background information I'm going to have to dig up, blah, 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 right? So you've given him a range, but now she's sending you, okay, you hung up, and now she's sending you the actual pages. If you feel you have enough, so she's sending you actual pages, and she's telling you what she needs done with them, how she needs them rewritten, you might have enough to go ahead and give her a quote, period, instead of just a ballpark. Mm-hmm. It's up to you at that point. It's
sounds
up to
good.
You.
Yeah, it looks like a lengthy project. Would this be something better to quote as not really a retainer. It looks like they want this done by September, 22 pages. Should I quote an overall quote or price per page, or what would be the best way to actually price this one?
Yeah, I recommend that you do not price it per page, that you quote a fixed fee, a flat fee for the 22 pages. It just, you know, once you start getting into itemized pricing, it's just really hard. It lends itself to them overanalyzing it.
Okay.
You know, and if you can throw something in there that makes it harder for her to figure out what your per page price is, even better.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We really had a great conversation. I checked out her LinkedIn profile first and found out that she's getting ready to do some volunteer work for theater. So we talked about that for a little bit, kind of put her at ease.
Uh-huh.
But now when I priced this thing, because I made it – just in talking to her, I tried to make it as hard as possible for her not to want to hire me. Should something like this be done? Like if I give them the overall figure, should then I split this up like 50% up front, 50% at the end of the project?
Well, those are terms, so that's not really a quote. That's
right.
Just the terms.
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry too much about that unless, like, what do you think? Do you think you have enough to go ahead and give her just a fixed price?
I'll probably know more after I check out her email. 22 pages of rewrites, I could probably come up with a pretty good price. But I told her I would have her something by Monday, and she was fine with that. So that'll give me a chance to look it over and actually see what it's going to take to translate it into geek speak, more or less.
What is she expecting from me now, you think? Does she say? Does she want kind of a ballpark right now, or do you think she wants a price? She wants a quote.
Well, I told her I could give her, you know, once I saw more of the project, I would give her a ballpark price.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be good to actually give her a firm price on the project, or go ahead and start with an estimate or ballpark price?
Well, it depends on two things: what you think she's expecting, or what she told you she's expecting, and two, if you have the information you need to quote an actual price. And so she's giving you one of the two parts that you need, right? She's giving you, okay, here's what we need rewritten. I don't know if you know how it needs to be rewritten. So what are we talking about? You know, I'm not asking you. I'm just – this is a question I'd be asking myself. Okay, on page one, that's one of the ones you mentioned, but how? What needs to be rewritten? How much? What does that entail?
Okay.
So if you know all that, then you probably have enough to go ahead and give her a quote. And when I have that, then what I do when I send a quote, I send my fee agreement, which has got not just the quote and the scope of work, but it also has the my terms. And that's when I talk about payment terms.
Okay. So send that along with it, like two different documents, one with the proposal and then the fee agreement, so they can strike while the iron's hot, get them excited enough to sign the agreement.
Yeah, but again, I don't know if do you have. You'll need to see if you have everything you need to quote it. But if you don't have enough, then you can give her a ballpark.
Okay, I think like I said, I hadn't looked at it. I think today she's given me enough to be able to actually quote the project. What she wants to send next week is just kind of the mechanics of how to do it, the templates and stuff like that. So, but the actual work, you know, basically probably changing it from consumer casual into business casual language is basically what the project will be about. So I just need to look at the page and see how difficult that's going to be then, right?
Okay, yeah. If that's the case, then it sounds like you will have all the information. And in that case, I would go ahead and send her the fee agreement, which includes scope of work, fee, and payment terms, and all your other terms.
All right. Well, that
helps
a lot. You'll
see,
Thank you.
In session seven, you'll see my sample templates for the fee agreements.
Yeah, I have that, yeah.
Yeah, so take a look at that. But if you don't feel you have enough, then that's when I say, okay, listen, I'll take a look at it. I think we're talking about somewhere between, you know, $4,000 and $6,000. Depends on a few things. I have a few questions. Can we talk on Monday?
Okay.
You know. Then let her know.
Excellent. This is going to be a big one, so that's why I wanted to ask that. It's like I said, it's a large company. They've actually been around for 50 years, and parts of the people they have acquired have been around since 1949. So they're probably used to dealing with professional rates, and that's why I wanted to make sure I get this one right.
Okay. So just make sure to emphasize your background, what makes you different, why you're the right person for the job, right? So, again, like we talked about earlier, what's that?
We actually talked about that some today on the phone. She had been to my website and asked what my background was, and I was sure to tell her all the things that made me uniquely qualified to handle this project for her, you know, my electrical background and all that kind of thing, so.
Just make sure your actual fee agreement states that. You know, one of the you'll see that in the my samples. But You want to indicate the objective, you know, what they want to accomplish, why you're uniquely qualified. The reason being, you may have talked to her about it, but if this is getting passed around, some of these people who are maybe in the decision may not know that. So you need that document to kind of stand on its own.
Okay.
So that's why I always like to include something.
Should that be in both the fee agreement and the proposal?
I never include a separate proposal. To the fee agreement, what I call a fee agreement, has three things. Mm-hmm. It has my price, it has the scope of work, and it has my terms and conditions.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't have a separate document that's a proposal. I'd like to keep it really, really simple and have it all in one document, and I call it a fee agreement.
Okay. Sounds great.
Yeah, yeah. Just make sure, yeah, make sure to emphasize that in the fee agreement. That way, if it gets passed around, people understand that, you know, you're uniquely qualified to write about this. That way, they're not just looking at a number; they're looking at the number in context.
Okay, so make sure that everybody knows why I'm the best one.
Exactly.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Good luck, man. Fingers crossed for you.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Steve. See ya. All right. Great questions here today. Let me just make sure I'm not missing anyone in the webcast. All right. So Taylor's got a question in the webcast, but let me had a couple people with their hand raised. So let me get to them, and I'll get to you, Taylor, the question you submitted. Sabriga on the phone. How are you?
Hi, I'm in Oakland, by the way. I don't know if you can see that.
I can see, but, you know, I stopped naming cities because I find that a lot of people are calling from a cell that they got in a city they lived 10 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
So.
Okay. So my question is kind of simple, but I just want to get some reflection on it so that I know what to do the next time. So
okay.
I have a former client for whom I did quite a bit of work, and now she's setting up a website. And she asked me to write a number of the pages, which I did. And in our contract, it said that I would write these pages and format them and upload them to her site. But then after we agreed to the price and I did all the work, her webmaster decided that he wanted to take care of the formatting part.
Mm-hmm.
So then that was fine with me. I actually like having control of that part, but okay. So then she writes to me and said, would you please look at the website? Just go over it. Tell me what you think and give me any more suggestions. So I did all that. We spent a long time on the phone. I talked with her probably a little over an hour, maybe even an hour and a half, gave her some suggestions about how to improve it or add to it. And then she, for which she was really happy. Then she wrote the next day to say, hey, we need still a little bit more on the landing page, basically. So then she's also sent me an editing thing. So so then I wrote that part. I edited her piece for her, and I billed her for both of those things. She wrote back to say that she didn't think I should have billed her for anything to do with the website, because I had said in the original agreement that I would take care of putting stuff on the website and I would work with the webmaster.
Mm-hmm.
So after reading your negotiation piece, I wrote back to her and I said, okay, I see where our miscommunication came in, and gave her a long email about that. Very nice and everything. And I said, how would it be for you if we just deduct this one portion, and then that way, you know, you'll have a discount, and the other document and the editing job I'm still getting paid for. So she wasn't in the least bit happy about that. She accepted it, but she wasn't happy about it at all. So I would just like your reflection on this as much as you can.
Sure. So let's just take some hypothetical numbers. Let's just say that you charge her, you quoted her $1,000 to write the web copy for these pages and to also format them and upload them to her site,
mm-hmm.
right? Let's just mm-hmm. say $1,000 just to make it a simple number.
Sure.
She accepted it. But then her web person said, actually, I'd rather do the formatting part. Go ahead and write it. That's fine. But I will take care of formatting and uploading it.
Mm-hmm.
You said, fine.
Mm-hmm.
You went ahead and wrote it. You sent it to her, to the webmaster, whatever. But then she or the webmaster needed you to do some formatting after all. So you went ahead and did that.
No, actually, it was just adding more content, a little bit more content.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, was it within scope?
It was definitely, well, it was within scope, but it was a new document, right? So that was my question about it.
Okay. But let's just say initially it was four pages. And
mm-hmm.
was this another page on the site, or was it just more?
Yeah,
content?
Like half a page, let's say.
Okay. So four pages, and then, you know, oh, we need more content. Fine. And then she sent you. Was there something else? You said there was another document she wanted
well,
to edit.
She's applying to be a speaker at this big conference, and so she wanted me to look at her presentation. And I not only edited it, I gave her all sorts of extra info on that. Like, you really need to be more specific here. Here's some numbers for you, like that. You know, other than
okay.
just fixing the actual written copy.
Okay.
So I felt like, you know, I did that, and then I gave her something extra by giving her all these suggestions and ways that she needed to still think about it, right?
Okay. So, but she never asked you how much more for this. She just said, hey, can you help me with this? And you said,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a couple of thoughts. The first is, again, let's just say – hypothetically, it was four pages, $1,000, and included all these things, some of which they said, well, actually, I'll take care of that. But then you ended up having to take care of some of that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I would have still billed $1,000. But if there was a problem, then I would have said, okay, I understand. You told me you would do this. Your web person said they would do that, which is included in $1,000. But then I ended up having to do some of it anyway. I can maybe see bringing that down a little bit, the $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's the part I would say, okay, I get it. Here's what happened. I'll bring that down to $900, let's say. The other item is a totally different project. That's a presentation proposal. You edited, you offered this, that, and the other. That's a totally separate project. So you didn't bill for that. So let's just say, again, using the $1,000 hypothetical number, you just billed $1,000 and you kind of bundled it into the presentation proposal into this scope of work?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm completely confusing you. No, we made those two separate projects.
Okay. Did you quote her anything for that, or there was never any discussion about money?
I just told her I would give her my editing rate. And, you know, she knows my editing, right? So we didn't even really talk about it. She just said, okay.
Okay. Okay, and that was before you did the work?
Yes.
Okay. So let's just say, for argument's sake, that was $300, and
mm-hmm.
you billed her $300. So you billed her $1,300. I would be willing to negotiate a little bit of the $1,000, but, I mean, the other project, you gave me this other thing. I told you, okay, great, I will give you the editing rate. I billed you $300, which is, you know, what this is worth. I don't understand, you know, why is this a problem?
So here's my other question, and I'm only bringing this up not because of the figures, but I just need your input to get some clarity on how to go about negotiating these and what's reasonable. And so
mm-hmm.
So I even mentioned to her, we spent an hour and a half or whatever it was, over an hour for sure, on the phone where I gave you many suggestions. I looked at your website, you know, I went over it. I revised stuff that you asked to be revised one more time, you know, so this is like third revisions or something. And so I feel like the price that I gave you is fair because I also gave you all this extra what would often be called consulting time. And you have I listed for her, and you have 1, 2, 3, 4 new ideas for your website that you can incorporate. So this felt fair to me. So what is your impression of that?
Yeah, I think that's – so here's the way you do that without them having an argument. Going back to the $1,000 example, I'd say, look, I'm willing to bring that down to $900. I see where the miscommunication happened. I will take responsibility for that. However, keep in mind that I also gave you this extra stuff, right? So you're taking all the potential comebacks from that person because you're saying, okay, great, I'll bring it down. That's fine because I'll take responsibility. But also keep in mind that I gave you all these other things. Now, I'm not telling you I want the full amount. I'm just saying you're probably not looking at the full picture here. And what that does is it disarms them because, you know, typically somebody would say, oh, wow. Okay, yeah, it's a great point. And some people actually kind of feel bad. So that's the way I would approach it. The other thing with a presentation proposal, the one thing I would have done differently is instead of saying, okay, great, I'll bill you my editing rate, is I would have given her at a minimum a ballpark range of what this will run.
Oh, uh-huh.
Up front. Okay, I see what you need done. Sure, I can edit this. Look, I'll bill this in my editing rate. You're probably looking at somewhere between $200 and $300. However, I will also spend some time with you afterwards giving you some pointers. I have some ideas that I think you should incorporate, some ideas that I think will help you land this speaking gig, yada, yada, yada. So, again, we talked about earlier about putting the – always put price in context. So it's not just a number. Now it's a number, but here's what I'm going to give you, and I'm going to give you these extras. And not only does it place it in the right context and gives her an idea of the value she's going to get for $300, but you're also getting agreement because that's the point for her to say, oh, whoa, wait a minute, Sabrina, I'm not ready to spend that kind of money. I'm not getting paid for this gig. I appreciate it, and I respect where you're coming from. Let's just hold off on that one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the time to have that discussion, not later when they're billing you, you know, when you're billing her $300 for this when she wasn't expecting that for whatever reason. I'm not justifying what she's doing or the way she's behaving.
I hear you. No problem. I hear you.
But it's important to talk money up front.
Yes, okay. And so that leads me to another question. So what do you do about things like people who want to talk and talk and talk about their project with you, you know, that is great for relationship, but it eats up your time where you could be being paid for something else. What do you do as far as containing that or framing that with them? I mean, because this is a thing I know about her. We worked on things before, and I spent a ton of time talking with her, just making nice and all this stuff because I wanted to work, and she's a nice woman. But what I also suspect is that because she's a high-powered business person, she maybe sees the value of the money differently and also is used to sort of pushing people. You know, so this is what became my concern as I saw that she was going to resist, a very small invoice, you know?
Yeah. Well, you always want to put parameters around that, especially if you know how that person is and how long-winded they can be. So what I'll say is, let's say typically this starts over email. Hey, can we talk about this project? I need your help with this. You know, is this something you think you might help me with? Can we get on the phone? Agree to it. And then what I'll usually do is either send an invite through my calendaring system that's half an hour. So that communicates a lot. We're saying from 2 to 2:30, we're going to talk about it. I usually don't have to also say I got half hour. Usually by sending the meeting invite, I'm communicating – very clearly, this is a half-hour conversation. And then what will happen is I'm getting close to that half hour, I will say, Maria, listen, I hate to interrupt, but I got another call here at 2:30. So, you know, you just basically try to wrap it up. And if you're just nowhere close to wrapping it up, then I would be willing to schedule another call, or maybe, you know, can you maybe summarize or send me some of this over email? Let me go through it, and then we can schedule another call to discuss specifics and pricing and all that. So, you know, this is not an unreasonable request. People understand that you have calls scheduled.
Mm-hmm.
So I always use that as an excuse.
That's a great idea. Okay.
Yeah, in fact, I some people go to extremes with this. I got a friend who, he won't schedule calls at 2:45, but what he'll do is he'll call somebody he needs to follow up with at like 2:50, for instance, and that way he gives himself only 10 minutes. And then at 3 o'clock, he says, hey, listen, Jim, I really got to run. I just wanted to make sure, you know, that you get this, or do we have this deal, or, you know, are you ready to proceed? But I got to jump on this other call here at 3.
Great.
It's just very natural excuse. I have to do that with my mom sometimes. I hate to say that. Because my mom, I love her to death, but like she just goes on and on and on, and sometimes I have to tell her, hey, Mom, it's almost always true. I got to jump on a conference call here too, Mom.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Okay. Thank you, Ed. That's helpful. Okay. So just one more quick thing. So you would have, for instance, said, okay, well, given that the full parameters of our actual contract weren't exactly fulfilled because I didn't have to format and upload those, you would have thrown in this other little document for free?
I didn't say that. I said I would treat it separately. Instead of 1,000, I maybe would have said, look, I'll charge 900 for that.
Okay.
Or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Because I understand where the miscommunication was. On this other deal, though, it's $300. I mean, here's what I did for that. Here's what you're getting out of it. That to me is a separate deal.
Mm-hmm.
And we never negotiated that, oh, because I didn't – there was never a discussion about the fact that because I didn't do this formatting, I was going to do this thing for free.
Yes. Okay, thank you. That's exactly the way I should have phrased it to you and her. Yes. Okay, that's
– yeah, you always want to build kind of that wall. Okay, this is one thing. And then this is this other thing. It's like two different buckets.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about them separately, because what she's trying to do, she's trying to lump them in together.
Mm-hmm.
You need to bring clarity to the discussion by saying these are two different things. On this first thing, I understand. I see where the miscommunication happened. Here's what I'll do. I'll bring it down to this. Keep in mind, however, that I ended up doing these extra things, so that we can make her feel a little bad. and then on this proposal, you know, I told you that this is going to be my editing rate. Not only did I give you that, but I also gave you all these other pointers, you know, without charging you anything for that. There's a lot of value in that.
Right.
But the lesson here, so you're just trying to fix it right now. The lesson here is always talk money. Never avoid it because, oh, I'll give you my rate for my family rate or my editing rate or whatever. Always make sure you got to go ahead based on as much information as possible. Susan, this is probably going to end up being about $300. I'm going to give you this, that, and the other, and I'm going to give you these tips based on my experience pitching speaking gigs, pitching talks. You know, will that work? Is that within your budget? Because that's the time to get a no, or that's the time to negotiate. You know, you mentioned negotiating earlier. That's
mm-hmm.
the time to do it. The worst time to negotiate is after services have been delivered.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. Very helpful. I appreciate
it. You're welcome. Great. Yeah, great question. These are all great questions, guys. This is important stuff, and it's good. You're actually having conversations with clients, with prospects, and this is what we're having to call this month, too, because many of you are getting to a point where you're applying what I'm teaching you, but the real learning doesn't happen from you going through sessions 6 and 7, for instance. You'll get some good stuff there. The real learning happens when you apply this information, because that's when the real questions come up. And, you know, even if you lose some of these deals right now, here's what I would tell you. You're going to learn so much from having these discussions with prospects and clients that's the real value of it. It's not the money that you made or could have made. It's the fact that this is now deeply engraved. You know, some of these things that we're talking about now, I learned very early on, and believe me, you know, I lost some great opportunities as a result, and that's why I still remember them so clearly, because, gosh, I just kicked myself, because I, you know, it happened. All right, Liz in New Mexico. Hey, Liz.
Hey, Ed, how are you?
Doing well. How's it going?
Fantastic. I have a question about pricing, okay? Mm-hmm. I am going to be working with a client, and what I'll be doing for him is a bunch of stuff, and it's not a proposal so much, because he's already selected me as the one to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to figure out what would be a fair price for him. It's going to be a series of 9 special reports that will be compiled into a book. And these are a little bit non-standard in the way that white papers and special reports are done, in that he's a really brilliant speaker, but he's just terrible at writing. He's just horrible at writing. So the way that this project will happen is that he will record basically a brain dump of his and send me the recording. I will be getting that transcribed. Then I will massage that into something useful and also do some additional research, come back with some more questions, some clarifications, and that'll basically be the process of it.
Mm-hmm.
Also as part of this, he's admitted that he needs some more autoresponders. He's going to need the landing pages for this. He also has some email courses that he does that he could use some tweaking on. So, I'm trying to figure out what would be a good starting point for negotiations.
Okay.
To me, this feels like a prime for a retainer.
It does. I never, however, recommend that you start with someone on a retainer basis,
mm-hmm.
for a couple of reasons. One is you want to make sure that you're a good fit for each other, for your sake and for their sake. The other reason it's just easier to get in the door with, it's less risk for the client. So I can usually do a better job getting a pilot project for a decent fee because the risk is very limited, as opposed to a retainer. We haven't even done a project together because now they're wondering,
right.
I don't know. I mean, is that a fair price? And now they're wondering, but because it's a lot of money, we're talking $30,000, right? But if we're
mm-hmm.
talking about $1,000, $2,000, that's a lot easier. There's fewer questions. Those are really the two biggest reasons.
Okay.
The third, well, this is actually related to those two, is if you do it that way and you do a couple of projects and then you bring that up or they bring that up, you're having that discussion, it's a lot easier to have that discussion.
Okay.
Everyone can be more open. And that's what you want in a discussion about retainer agreements. You want a very
mm-hmm.
open discussion. And you can't have that if the relationship is not there yet.
Okay.
So, So that's the first thing. Now, what would be most helpful to you? Kind of figure out, okay, how much should you charge for these reports?
Right.
Well, let me take a step back. I would encourage you to propose, hey, this is all great. Yeah, I want to definitely work with you. Why don't we start with a pilot project? Why don't we start with one thing?
Okay.
Here again, it's going to make him feel a lot more comfortable. It's going to be easier on you. It's going to be less overwhelming, because if you're trying to figure out pricing because, you know, you're going to do all of these and then all of that and then four of that and then six of the other, that's too hard.
Right.
So I've never had anyone disagree with me or get turned off by this offer. I'd say, Jim, listen, this all sounds great. I'd love to work with you. I have a really good feeling that we're going to work well together. I'd like to try doing this. I'd like to start out with a pilot project. And by that, I mean, let's pick something. It's probably maybe the most important thing. Let's start with that. Let's get a good feel for each other. And then let's look at these other things. But why don't we start with this? I think we'll give you a really good idea of how, you know, my writing, how I work, how we both work together and all that. I've never had anyone get weirded out by that.
Okay.
And you know, if you're good, man, you're going to be fine. Like, your chances of getting additional work aren't going to be lower. So approach it that way, and let's say that you decide that the most important thing is doing this lead magnet. He's got eight he wants to do, but you pick one.
Okay.
So start with that. The other thing it will give you, Liz, it lowers your risk in terms of if you end up quoting a little too low, because you realize later that the scope is a little different, you can address that on the other ones. But if you agree to do eight of these and you quote a flat fee for each and then you realize, oh, my gosh, you know, I didn't realize this, that, and the other, you're stuck.
Right. Right. Yeah, because I have a feeling that all nine of these will be of different lengths.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be a challenge to fit them all into one particular bucket.
Yes. Even more reason.
Yeah.
Let me make a suggestion, though, in terms of, I know you maybe weren't asking about this, but in terms of how I would approach the project, rather than him recording or talking through the content blindly, give him a set of questions or an outline. That way he talks through it in order, in a logical order. The way I do this is, I will give people questions, or I'll ask them questions. I like to be there on the call instead of them doing it on their own.
Okay.
And ask the questions in the order that I'm going to write the piece.
Okay.
In that way, the reason I like to be there is people can, if they're on their own, they tend to jump all over the place, even if they have the questions in front of them. So that way I can bring them back. If you do it that way, then your transcript will be in better shape, and you'll be able to use it better to write the draft. Otherwise, it's going to be all over the place, and your transcript is, I won't say useless, but it's going to be very hard to turn it to a draft.
Okay. That's good advice.
Yeah. So you can reverse engineer that, right? Just take a standard report or lead magnet, okay, what's the typical structure? And most of them start out with the problem, right? The problem with this is this, that, and the other, which leads to this other thing.
Okay.
And then it's a solution. Here's how you solve that, and here's why this is a better approach. It's a very common structure for a report.
Okay. Well, that helps a lot. And,
yeah,
you know, the great thing about this guy is that he's already referred me another client to work on web copy for somebody else before
nice.
I even worked with him. Yeah.
Nice.
And,
sorry, go ahead.
And it's like I'm I am the market of one for what he needs.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. The one thing I would say, too, is in terms of just because he's talking it through, even if you organize the questions like we talked about, there's the work is still about the same.
Okay.
So keep that in mind. Like it doesn't make it any cheaper. It's just another source of information, background information, right? You're still going to have to do about the same amount of work. It's still going to require a certain level of expertise to turn that into a cohesive report.
Okay.
There's Gordon Graham, the white paper guy. He's got a great joke about this house painter who this guy hires him to paint the outside of his house. He says, okay, well, here it is. You know, here are the colors we want. How much would you charge me? And the guy says, $5,000. And then the homeowner says, whoa, all right, that's a lot of money. What if I helped you? Because, you know, I've done some painting myself. And he goes, if you help me, $7,000. Sometimes what the client thinks would help or would help bring the price down doesn't necessarily help. It can actually get in the way. I'm not saying this would be a situation like that, but just FYI, keep that in mind when clients think, oh, but if I give you this, that, and the other, you know, wouldn't that be less? Wouldn't it cost less?
Okay. That's good advice because I had been wondering how it would really work. And I can see, talking to you, that just getting his brain dumps won't make it any easier, and that actually might be more of a challenge.
It could be in some ways. You'll have better content or in some respects, but in other ways it could be more of a mess. It depends on what the personality is. I worked with a client for a couple of years who was like this, and he was very scatterbrained.
Mm-hmm.
So he was kind of all over the place. So even though he's very smart and could work with me to develop very specific topics, when it came to the content itself, he would just go off on a tangent, and it's reining him in, which was sometimes difficult.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay, well that helps a lot. So starting off with a pilot project, I like that idea. And I'm thinking that it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to keep my fee kind of low for this. Just because we're starting out?
In what way?
So that we can, well, so that he won't feel like I'm trying to gouge him?
Yes. Yeah, so that's the whole reason for the approach. Not the whole reason, it's one of the benefits, is in a way you're disarming him, because that's not what people expect. People expect, when they see opportunity, to want to take it all, and you're exercising restraint.
Right.
He realizes he could have gone after the whole thing, but you know, that's not your goal. Your goal is to develop a long-term client and to make sure he's happy.
Right. Right. And now something that might make it even more interesting, something I haven't told you, is that his specialty is helping accountants with their pricing.
Okay.
So he is an expert on pricing and in making sure that both sides get value.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that whatever arrangement we reach will be fair to both of us.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
By the way, never underestimate the power of these pricing strategies. Like, if you, even when you're dealing with a pricing expert, they still work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of what I taught you guys, people use on me all the time. And mm-hmm. I don't want to say I fall for it, because it's not really a gimmick. It's just psychology. And it still works.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like anchoring, putting things in perspective in terms of pricing. All these things work, no matter how knowledgeable the other person might be.
Right. Okay, well, I can see I've got some homework to do before I talk to him again.
Okay, well, good luck.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Keep us posted. Let us know how that goes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You'll be some of the first to know.
Okay. All right, Liz. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. Have a great day.
Hey, you too. All right. So let me get to the webcast. Taylor had submitted a question. Let's see. He said, a question about agency work. I've been contacting agencies and have gotten several good responses, but they asked about my quote-unquote agency rate, and I'm wondering exactly what that means and what I should say it is. Any advice? Probably a silly question, but I don't want to take a chance. Also, you said we can be more aggressive in going after work with agencies, and there are several I can reach back to that express interest, but what's a good example of more aggressive? Do I just straight out ask for work, or just remind her that I'm here or something else? Okay, so let's talk about these. There are several questions here. The first one is agency rates. So, you know, agencies are there's advantages and disadvantages. One of the advantages they have, as I've mentioned before, they have quite a bit of work. I mean, they have a steady stream of work coming in. Most of them don't have staff writers, so they're used to working with outside writers, so it's a very transactional thing. And even if they have a go-to writer or two, let's face it, they're going to be freelancers, and that freelancers aren't always available. So it's in their best interest, and they know it, to have kind of a file of potential backups they can turn to in case their go-to writer is slammed or can't take any work or went on maternity leave or whatever. So they don't, you know, they don't take offense to you contacting them. In fact, if your approach is very professional and relevant and personalized, like I've been teaching you in this class, then you have a really high chance of standing out and for them to have a conversation with you. And it looks like Taylor has had some conversations, which is awesome. Now, the bad thing about agencies is that these guys, almost all of them, Bill, they're just used to hourly. That's the way they invoice their clients, even if they're on retainer. It's a flawed model, but that's just kind of the way the industry works as a whole. Like, you know, one of those things. That's the way it's always been done. So they're used to doing it that way when they bill clients and when they talk to clients, so they kind of treat their vendors and freelancers the same way. It's like, well, what's your rate? You know, they just want to, like, just cut right down to it. So this, unfortunately, might be a situation where you'll need to come up with something. Now, as your business grows and you have more experience, you can change that model a little bit, Taylor, and this goes out to everyone. You know, you can decide to work with agencies on a fixed fee basis. I know I've worked with one. In fact, they contacted me again yesterday. I haven't worked with them in a couple of years. Did a white paper for them. I billed at my full rate, and I billed a fixed fee, fixed project fee. I didn't quote an hourly rate or anything. So as you grow, as you get more experience, you'll be able to price things differently. But right now, what I would say is, you know what, just go ahead and play their game. That's fine. Again, you're not here to try to get clients for the long haul. You're trying to get some momentum. And, Taylor, I know in your situation, you're trying to get momentum as quickly as possible. I would just come up with a rate. Great. Well, my agency rate is between, you know, and go with something relatively low, between $40 and $60 an hour or $40 and $50. Give them a kind of a tighter range or give them just a flat rate and see what happens. The rate doesn't really matter as much as you want it to be low enough for them to say yes to you, but not so low that you're scaring them. Too low would be $15, $20 an hour. Too high, if you're starting out, would be, you know, $70, $80, $90 an hour. Okay, so that's going to be on the higher side. So, I don't know. You could just try it. Start with 40 and see what happens. So there's that. In terms of what do I mean by being more aggressive, I mean that just follow up. Just follow up. So the way you follow up is just not by not asking, are you ready, are you ready, are you ready, every time. Mix it up. So let's say, look, I don't have anything right now, Taylor. Give me a few weeks, and there's some things that might come in, and you know we might have an opportunity here for you. Okay, great. So they said a few weeks. You know what? I would check back in with them in 3 weeks. But I wouldn't do what everybody else does. I wouldn't say, are you ready? Instead, I would send them something that I feel is interesting information. So it depends on what you know about them. Let's say they're a B2B agency and they focus a lot in financial services and healthcare. You might come across an article, or you can even find one, dig one up from the Content Marketing Institute, for instance, on content marketing for financial services firms and maybe some new developments or some new ideas or a case study. Send them that. Say, hey, Jim, it's Taylor here. We talked a few weeks ago. I'm a freelance copywriter. We talked about, you know, potentially helping you with some projects down the road. I came across this article the other day. I thought you'd find it interesting. Anyway, let me know if I can help you. Take care. Right. So notice that you followed up without saying, do you have anything for me yet? Okay. Now, if you don't hear anything, give them another 2 or 3 weeks, and this time maybe take a more direct approach. Hey, Jim, checking back in with you. You mentioned that you might in a few weeks you might have some opportunities, some projects where I'm going to be able to help you. Just checking in. Didn't want to lose touch. Let me know if I can help you. Okay. Then the next time, wait another few weeks, and now do and again another article. As your business grows and you get more experience, you can always send them a sample. Hey, I just recently wrapped up this project with a client. I want to send you a link to it. Just will give you a better idea of my style or what I do with some of my clients, that sort of thing. So that's another thing you could do. There are many different things you could send, but when in doubt, just send an article that's relatively relevant to what they do. So that's what I mean by following up. You're nurturing that prospect until they're ready to maybe talk with you. You just want to stay top of mind because believe me, not all of them will literally put your information or print out your email and put it in a file. Many of them won't remember. So if you make it easy to remember you, then by the way, you could also do this. The examples I just gave you are via email. I encourage you to also send a physical printed letter as well with a business card attached to it, maybe a post-it note. You can do the same thing with the article. Just print out the article, put a post-it note. Hey, Jim, thought you'd find this interesting. Hope you're doing well. Sign Taylor, and then put a staple your business card to it or attach it with a paper clip. And again, you want that physical aspect of the communication can help. All right, so again, if you're on the phone and you got any questions, star 2 on your telephone keypad raises your hand. I think while I'm waiting, I just want to emphasize, you know, one common theme I think today has been, really over the past week, is always talk money, right? Always talk money in that conversation, even if the prospect doesn't mention it. I know it's uncomfortable, but it gets better with practice. And if you have those questions memorized, it makes it a lot easier. Great. So now that I understand your project, I think I got a pretty good idea of what you're trying to do here. Let me ask you, what budget are you working with? I find that just memorizing the question, however you want to ask it, I ask it exactly like I just gave it to you. Memorizing the question really helps, so that way you're not nervous, you're not stumbling over it. And then if they don't give you a range or a number, quote a ballpark range, give them an idea, even if it's a general idea, and then ask them, throw it back at them. So is that within your budget? Okay, it's important to have that money conversation. All right. So caller from Minnesota, 507 area code, you're on.
Hi, Ed. This is Michael Gibson.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Real good. I've got a question again about prospecting, and I was able to finally talk to somebody who responded to my warm email.
Okay.
And, you know, my area of expertise is insurance, and I've gone through a number of insurance companies, and then I came upon the idea of something called cyber insurance.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I have exact experience in, but it's a very interesting area because of a lot of companies are having these breaches on their data, you know, people hacking into their website and so forth, and they actually have something now called cyber insurance.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, I got in touch with the company, and they called me and talked to me about my background and so forth. And I followed your checkpoints and everything, and the conversation went pretty well. It turned out that most of the writing, though, is done in-house because they have a hard time finding somebody with a technical enough background to talk in the terms that they are used to communicating. And what my basic question is, I had some thoughts after our call. I don't know, I call it delayed intelligence on my part, where I come back and thought of some other things I could have mentioned to this person where I wouldn't have to necessarily be talking in a technical realm to somebody who's an IT manager, but if I was talking to somebody who is a corporate executive or somebody who is on the management team, I felt qualified to be able to write to that person because I wouldn't have to talk in such technical language and still talk about the importance of having cyber insurance. Is that a good approach to use, where you follow up with an email with some insight on some other ways to approach the white paper, other than having just to write it to a technical audience that I probably don't have the background to be able to do?
Well, it depends on what you guys, how you ended the call. So you went through everything, and did you discuss a project in particular?
Yes, I did. I asked if they had any projects, and he said he would love to have some white papers to be written, but he, again, has a hard time finding people who have a technical enough background to have it done.
Okay.
And then he asked me if I had any samples, and it just added some samples on my website, not anything that I've done since I've been a freelancer, but I have written things over the years. So I was able to put some things on my website. So he said the way the call ended would be he would check out some of my samples, and based on what he saw, you know, he would get back to me. And then it was shortly after that, maybe 3 or 4 hours, that I sent this follow-up email about being able to write to a different target audience other than just technical people.
Okay. So here's the thing. So the questions you're talking about, they're not really relevant until you've landed a project, because they don't really factor into your pricing. So those are really more background questions, informational questions that will help you if and when you land a project. But initially, what you're really asking about is kind of what we walked through in that lesson, right? How can I help you? What's the project scope? What do you need help with? What's the timing? All of those points, and then budget. And then hopefully you agree to, you know, send them a proposal on something very specific. But other information doesn't really factor in at that point until you have the project.
Right. I understand. Yeah, it didn't sound like, you know, even though he would like to have some things written, he just has trouble finding somebody with a technical enough background, because this is a highly technical area, cyber and security and that type of thing.
Yeah.
I'm not
sure if
I
did he get
the
impression, or did you give him the impression that, you know, you, that would be something you could do?
I gave him the impression that with enough research I could do it, but, you know, maybe he's concerned about my learning curve and whether I'd have to do a lot of rewrites and that type of thing, whether it was, you know, feasible for me to be hired to do that type of thing.
So where did you leave it?
Well, you know, I just, the way I left it on the phone was that, you know, I felt that I could do the white papers, and I even asked him also about case studies, because they only had one case study on the website, and he said that his challenge was he had trouble with companies wanting to actually use their name in a case study.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I could understand that, and basically, you know, I said, you know, I can understand that challenge, but I would think that with a lot of the high-profile security breaches that we see in the news, that a company that is taking a proactive approach, this would be good advertising value for them. And, you know, he agreed, but again, the way the phone call was finally left was that he would look at my writing samples that I had on my website, and then based on that, he would get back to me.
Okay.
And that was Friday last week.
So now it's just, you know, all you can do is now follow up. And the whole intent of your follow-up sequence at this point is to see if you can discuss a pilot project, just like we were talking about earlier.
Right.
You know, and see, hey, give me a chance. This is something I can do. You know, stress what you do have. So don't focus on what you may not have. Stress what you do have, and maybe even connect the dots as to how that would make you a great partner on a project, right? So focus on your strengths. Try to get something that's low risk, a pilot project, and see if you can get somewhere with that. You know, you're not going to be able to convince them that they need to do case studies, and I wouldn't worry about that. Leave it up to them. Maybe position it as a, like I said, a pilot project, a low risk. Let's pick something. Give me a shot, and then lower, you know, price it in a way that's easy for him to say yes. And just try to get in the door. And then at that point, that's when you can maybe ask some questions. You're going to need to. At that point, you need to gather information to do the project.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, the one thing I guess that intrigued him, other than the fact that I have a varied background, was the fact that I have an insurance experience. And that might be my greatest value to them, because they're trying to sell cyber insurance also. Most of the work that they do is actually, most of the work they do nowadays is in metrics. Being able to find out, you know, are their vendors a security risk and that type of thing. And so there's all this technical stuff that's done through the internet to check on people's, you know, security metrics, actually. And then as a result of that, they can figure out the exact risk and then recommend the insurance.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, just make sure to follow up with them. Keep, you know, continue to follow up and then position it as a pilot project.
Okay, and the follow-up should be followed by phone rather than email?
I would do both. Start with email. Then if you don't hear anything, give them, you know, 3 to 5 business days, then do phone.
Okay.
And then go back to email.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Thank you. I'm getting some calls scheduled, so we'll see how that all goes.
There you go. I mean, you're doing the right thing. It's just, you keep doing what you're doing, something's going to pop.
That's what I figure.
Awesome.
Alrighty.
All right, Michael. Good luck.
Thanks, Ed. Thank you.
You're welcome. Welcome. All right. All right. 909 area code. I think this might be Ryan. Hello?
Oh, hi, Ed.
Hey.
Yeah. Hey again. I just, as I was sitting on the call, I thought of another question.
Okay, sure.
So I got into the phase where I was starting to do some printed letters after a few weeks of not getting any response from emails. I'm not sure if you had, if this was addressed in one of the lessons, but do you have a method for tracking down addresses to send printed letters to? Because some of the big companies, they have multiple sites, and I get a little bit of info from LinkedIn, but sometimes if they don't have their location of the company they're working at, and if they don't have anything on data.com or something, then I guess I just sort of, I don't have an address, so I can't send anything unless I just send it blindly to a site. So just wondering if you had any tips on finding addresses for sending a printed letter.
Yeah, so it's unfortunately, it's what you just said. It's the same kind of detective work. What makes it hard is some people might be based in an office in Minneapolis, but they really work from home. So they may just go into the office once a week or every couple of weeks, and that's it. So you don't really have – that's the best you can do. I find that if I can – the bigger the company, the harder it gets. So somebody at IBM in LinkedIn, it might tell me they're in Atlanta. But IBM has several offices in Atlanta. So LinkedIn is not going to give me enough. It just narrows it down to one city. Now I don't know which office. So data.com Connect can usually help a lot there. But that's really, you know, other than doing that kind of searching and doing some Google searches, that's typically all I'm able to do. So that can get hard. With smaller companies, it's a lot easier, though, because you'll know, right? If it's XYZ company and the profile says, you know, she's in Atlanta, then I can look that up, and they only have one location in Atlanta, so it's easier.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it sounds like I'm doing the right thing then. Some of the prospects I'm getting no info for their address, so – or it's just too many companies, and I don't know where it is, so I just kind of put them on disqualify and move on.
Yeah. You know, something I haven't tried, but it's something I probably would do if I were doing this today, would be to write the letter, print it, hand sign it, and then scan it, and then send it as an attachment. Hey, Jim, I want to follow up with you. Hey, I was going to mail you this letter. I can't find your mailing address, so I've attached it here. And then give them a clue as to what it is. Don't be completely mysterious. So maybe do the meaningful connection part there in the email. Mm-hmm. I'm a copywriter. I focus on, you know, healthcare marketing. I'm also unique, and then I'm a practitioner as well. Anyway, the letter will tell you more. Let me know if you'd like to connect.
Yeah.
And that could be different enough that you'll get their attention. So it's not, you know, it's not physical mail, which is really the biggest reason you want to send it, just to kind of change the medium.
Mm-hmm.
But it can have a similar effect in that it's different.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds cool. I'll try that.
Yeah, and by the way, if you can get close, many times the company will just forward the letter. So IBM, let's say they got four offices in Atlanta. You send it to one of them. It's your best guess. Many times they'll forward it to the right one. The mailroom will figure out where that person is and send it to the right one, but not always.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Thanks for those ideas.
Okay. Sure. All right. All right. So we got time for one more question, and I see Sabriga's got her hand raised. Here you go. You're on, Sabriga.
Oh, thanks for taking my second question. I appreciate it.
Sure.
So I just want to circle back to something you just said, but give you my particular context for it and see if I'm understanding you correctly. So I have a book, ghostwriting book contract that I'm trying to get with someone who contacted my associate from LinkedIn, and she referred it to me. So I contacted him. He got back to me fairly quickly, but he couldn't really deal with talking about the contract. I waited. I contacted him again the next week. He said, I'm super pressured. I'm trying to get out of here, go on vacation. So I waited 2 weeks, and then I contacted him again, and it was right before the holidays. And he said, oh, man, I just don't have time. Can I, you know, I promise to get back to you, you know, basically like that. And I said, I left it at, okay, it sounds like you're so busy. Why don't I leave it in your hands to get back to me when you're back from vacation and your schedule has slowed down? So that's like 2 weeks or so ago. So what would be your next step given this?
So you did, I think you did the right thing. You know, I mentioned this earlier. You cannot elevate the urgency of a project that a prospect might have.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about following up, we're not talking about following up because you are trying to elevate the urgency, because that's impossible to do. So take that pressure off your shoulders. There's no point, especially with a project like that, a book ghostwriting project. Typically, that's a personal project. Even if it's a business project, it's still something, it's a personal initiative for that individual.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be motivated enough. This is a big project. They need to be motivated enough intrinsically to move on it. Because if they're not, if they don't have enough intrinsic motivation, then you can't give them that. So at this point, what I would do is I would add them to what I call my nurturing list. And my nurturing activities are, I mentioned this a little bit earlier, I just didn't call it nurturing. It's staying in touch in a low-key, non-threatening way. So rather than saying, hey, Jim, are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Which is annoying. Mm-hmm. You instead follow up with interesting information you send from time to time. And, you know, you might want to, so if you just followed up with them, I give them another 4 to 6 weeks.
Oh, great.
Send them something, you know.
Okay.
Hey, I came across this great article the other day about book ghostwriting. Thought you'd find it interesting. Let me know, you know, if and when you're ready to reconnect.
Great.
Right. Just stay professional. You're following up indirectly, and people appreciate that. Because, believe me, when he's ready, he's going to get back to you, or he's going to do something about it. So pressuring him is not going to have a positive effect. It may actually backfire. But by doing it this way, you're different from everybody else, number one. And number two, you're having the intended effect, which is reminding them that you exist. So when he's ready, he remembers your name. Because what he may not have, he may not remember your name. And if you think about, okay, man, what was the name of that book ghostwriter I was talking to? Where is that person going to check? They're going to check their email, right? So if he remembers your name, then he'll know what to search for to find your email so he can reply to your last message and reconnect.
Yes, great. Okay.
So that's what you want. And by the way, this goes for everybody. When you're doing nurturing, lead nurturing, don't rack your brain trying to come up, or don't spend hours looking for articles that you think are going to blow their minds. That you don't need anything monumental. You just need something that's relevant enough
mm-hmm.
that it makes sense.
Yeah, great. Oh, okay. I'm glad you said 4 to 6 weeks, because I would have tried sooner than that, so that's much easier, more casual.
Yeah, more casual, especially since you told them, look, I'm going to leave this with you.
Mm-hmm.
It would kind of go counter to that if you followed up a little too soon.
Exactly. Well, that was my concern, because he is actually a book ghostwriter himself. He was somehow farming this out. I think there was something about him and the client not really grooving. So he was looking for someone. And what I said to him was, well, okay. So after, you know, my last email, I said, it sounds like this isn't really a very time-sensitive project, and there's not a real hurry. And so why don't I just leave it with you and, you know, keep my name for anything else that might come up in the future, something, or how we can work
there
together, or something like that.
Excellent.
Okay, so then waiting 6 weeks or so is not going to make him feel pressured in the least, because then by then it'll be about two months since I had contacted him, if I don't hear from him in the meantime.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you for taking my second question. That was really helpful.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. All right, guys. Well, hey, great call today. Great questions. And I'm just encouraged to see that you guys are taking action and making things happen. And, you know, as you can tell, right, the process itself is not pretty sometimes. It's not clean, but this is how you learn. This is how you learn this new skill. This is how businesses get built. It's not always a straight line. It's usually just kind of a jumbled mess. And just know that that's the same for pretty much everybody. So you're not alone here. So again, I wanted to remind you that we're going to have a second coaching call this month, and it's scheduled for, let me see, I believe it's the 28th, I believe. So anyway, we'll send you reminders for that. But we'll have, yeah, it's the 28th, the 1 o'clock Eastern time. And then you'll also get another lesson here on the 18th. This will be kind of a longish lesson, but it's not one that you need to implement now. It's some training material that I want to give you now that will help you as your business grows, and it's on finding opportunities mostly with existing clients once you have those. So just know that's coming here in a couple of weeks. So with that, guys, we'll sign off. Have a great rest of the day, wonderful weekend. Keep doing what you're doing, and we'll continue the conversation in the forum. You guys take care.